You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and being the second Wednesday of the month between 1 and 2, we have our legal people in from Hutchison Legal. I have with me today Philip and Robert. Welcome, guys.
Good morning, Alan. How are you? Good afternoon, Alan. How are you?
Good morning.
So good night in the end, Robert. You've got to say hello.
Yeah, good afternoon. How to all the listeners out there. My name's Robert.
Now, we sent you away last time. We had a quite an interesting conversation. A guy rang up and he was travelling down Eastlink, I think it was, and the police had pulled somebody up. And we know the rules are that when the flashing lights, whether they be fire, ambulance, I guess SEC or police, it's a 40k zone. But he was in the right-hand lane. So there's three lanes plus the service road. The police were in the service road. He wanted to know, first of all, did the whole three lanes. Then the proposition was put, what about the cars that are going down the other way on these links? Are they miles away? Then we then brought up the position of on a major highway in the country, where there's just a two-lane, one lane each way, does the one going the other way have to slow down? And also, if they did it alter when there was a these barriers down the middle? So there's really four questions in one.
Thanks, Alan. Yeah, I had three questions. We've got four. That's fantastic. I'm going to take this one. It really is fascinating. The simple answer, and then I'll give a bit more background. The simple answer is all the lanes on the East Link heading in the direction that your driver caller was driving need to slow down.
Whole three or four of them. Yep.
Correct. The object of this rule, the rules in the road safety rules, is to protect the what they call the first responders. Yep. You're quite right. It's SES, it's AMBOs, it's police. There's a whole bunch
fire
of
brigade.
Fire brigade, CFA or Metropolitan.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a whole other emergency type vehicles.
It's only if they're flashing red and blue, is that right?
Red and blue or a siren, yeah.
So if it's a tow truck flashing orange.
No, that doesn't apply, correct. So, and the policy behind it is, it's to protect them. Vic Rhodes did a survey and they found that about nearly one in five have been traumatised because they've nearly been hit.
Yep.
It's to avoid collision, you know, on more than four occasions. And then there's about a quarter of people who have mental health issues with this, so it's pretty dangerous stuff.
Yep.
So it's to slow everyone down. The 40Ks is interesting, if I can just touch on that. So yep. The obligation is, first of all, when you see that happening, is to slow down.
But not if you're on the other side of Eastlink.
If you're on the other side, none of this applies if there's a median strip between the lanes and the other divided line, going the other way.
Yep.
Median strip, they don't have to stop.
Yep.
If there's no median strip, everyone slows down. Because the policy is that you, the driver, don't know where the accident is, what the police are actually doing, or the AMBO.
Oh, yeah,
it could be spot fires. There could be... So you've got to then... You see it, you've got to approach... The first obligation is to approach at a safe speed so that you can stop if necessary.
Yep.
The obligation then is when you go past, you've got to go past not more than 40 k's an hour, 40 kilometres an hour.
Okay.
And when it's safe, when you've gone a sufficient distance, that's the road rules.
What's that?
Well, that's a nice rubbery concept. A sufficient distance. So when you've gone a sufficient distance, you can then go back up to the speed limit. You don't have to wait for the sign to come to tell you.
Yep.
But what's a sufficient distance? So if we've got fire brigade and there's a whole bunch of workers, up the road, 200 metres, spot fires, you would have to pass all of them. Past the last worker.
Yeah.
If it's just a policeman who's pulled somebody over or attending to an incident, and it's pretty clear that once you've passed him, there's nothing else, you can start to accelerate then up to the speed limit.
Yep.
You can never do more than 40 when you're going past.
Yeah. Yep. What about then we get out on the major highway where there's nothing down the middle of the road, it's just one lane each way?
Okay, so double lines are not a median strip. A single line dividing this road that you've described is not a median strip.
Yep.
and neither is the broken line.
Yeah.
If it's a median strip, if there's a median strip, then the traffic coming on the other side doesn't have to slow down. But if there's nothing at all, you've just got the normal white line or the double line, then the legislation supports, well, sort of legislation, the road rules support the and Vic Roads also endorse this, that everybody slows down.
Both ways.
Because the thinking is, just because the policeman's pulled over on the left-hand side, I'm driving and the policeman's on my left, I don't know where that incident is. It could be in the middle of the road, it could be on the other side. So everyone slows down to 40. Practical advice would be, don't take a risk. If you want to be a maverick and try and have a test case on this, because, and actually the fines are quite extensive. I did a bit of a check on this. For an infringement notice by the police, it's probably around about $300, $336. But the road rules say 5 penalty units. Now, penalty units about $192. So if you go to court on it, you want to challenge it, you'll get slugged $962 plus court costs.
And you lose points as well?
No, you don't lose points.
Oh, don't you?
No. Oh. According to the Vic Roads website, you don't.
That's surprising. I thought you would have lost. All right, we've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
I will say, if you have any questions of the law, we can't talk about a case because that takes, you need to spend a lot of time with a lawyer before you take on a case. But any aspects of the law, if you want to give Greg a quick ring out there, 59-615-991. 59-615-991, and we'll ask them while we've got them. We've got both Philip and Robert from Hutchison Legal. Robert, you want to talk about compensation, or crime compensation?
Yeah, I do, and thanks for giving that little insight there, Phil. Philip, fascinating stuff. I'll make sure to be prudent on the road. Now, with respect, definitely. Now, with respect to the compensation order, kind of, I'll start off broadly speaking what VOCAT is, because a lot of the times that my clients are
clients don't know what
victims of crime. Yeah, right. You're right. So I assume that my my colleagues in the past may or may not have discussed what victims of crime is, but it's broadly a government scheme set up to help victims. Now, the scheme is tokenistic, it's symbolic, so people who have been victims of a crime, often they might get something from loss of earnings if they had to take time off from work, medical expenses reimbursement, the basics. Now, a lot of the times, some victims, they feel that the level of injustice that's been done to them is not sufficient, and the symbolic token is not enough to justify what's happened to them.
Well, the courts might have ordered some money or whatever, but not...
Well, in this situation, it would be the tribunals who've perhaps given some sort of assistance or a small symbolic assistance to the victim. Now, this is where it's interesting, where a lot of the times victims are not aware of or fully aware of the rights that they're actually potentially eligible for. This is where a compensation order can come in. And it's a remedy where, on top of a person needing to be actually convicted on the charges that's been, or that is the offender being convicted on the charges, that's where a compensation order can also go attached to that order, to the sentence, basically. And so what happens is basically there needs to be a year limitation period. So as long as this application is done after a person's been convicted and within a year, the application for seizing the proceeds seizing the property of an actual offender and the proceeds of that can go to compensating. And I use that in inverted commas because that's the actual terminology where people can get their loss and suffering and grievance, and those are stronger, more demanding words where people feel as though the justice that they have, that hasn't been met initially, especially if the offender's been perhaps the conviction initially when they maybe it's a small time of actual jail or it's a community correction order, and the injustice that a victim feels is not enough to justify what's happened to them, hence why a compensation order might come in, and it's of a particular interest and nuance as well.
Is there a dollar limit that can is there a maximum dollar limit that these can be awarded?
Yeah, it's a good question there. So it depends on a lot of the times, and I apologize for going into some of my lawyer mode here, but it depends a lot on the precedent set of previous cases, and also on the material evidence on medical and that's quite important actually, because it really boils down to what is actually the impact that's happened to the victim. So often an independent sort of report, a clinical report, will be requested by the court or the solicitors involved in this, and we'll have to sort of and that will provide a sort of a comprehensive backdrop of the extent of the injuries of the person.
But is there an overall limit? Like, there's only, say, 10,000 or 15,000 or 20,000?
It depends a lot on the size of the assets as well. Typically, also whether we can settle the case outside of court as well, which is particularly interesting because a compensation order might have to go to court or it might not have to. I mean, hopefully we can avoid going to court, because if it does go to court, it's a lot more expenses associated with getting solicitors involved, getting barristers involved. Hopefully we can settle cases outside of court where we don't even have to re-traumatise a client by going into court and arguing over the small nuances over money and, you know, who gets the largest portion of the shares of the assets, etc. So the more that it's settled outside of court, the more a person is looking at potentially getting. But say if it's a $1 million asset, and I'm just sort of giving a sort of a loose example here, but say it's outside, within the realm of $1 million, you could potentially get maybe 2/3 or a third of that particular asset itself. That goes; those proceeds go to the victim himself.
Pardon me. We still haven't covered what I'm trying to get at.
Is you trying to get figures?
Yeah. Well, I want to know if It's limited to $10,000, $50,000, $100,000 or $1 million. Is there a limit on it, or is it just limitless, only limited by the asset?
It's limited by the asset itself, to my experience.
So if you were the one person that was involved in that case, and people say they seized $1 million, but surely... you wouldn't get the whole million, would you?
Look, it's case-by-case basis. I can't sort of speak on previous precedents, but what I could just say is, in my experience, you wouldn't... there's a lot more of costs that potentially might go into an application. But in its entirety, the overarching theme is that the person gets their compensation, and it's worth it. A lot of the times it is, but there's some balancing acts, and I'll leave it at that when it comes to it.
No worries. All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
I would love to love you like you do me. I'd love to love you like you do me. I met you on a sunny autumn day. Instantly attracted me when asking for the way. God, if I had known the pain I'd make you feel, would have stopped this start of us and turn upon my heel.
Though you say we be in
time, make it be alright.
Voices, local events. Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And welcome back to Community Connections. I have both Philip and Robert from Hutchison Legal. That's funny, I was starting to cough.
Sorry, Alan.
Not okay, problem. Now, look, we want to talk a little bit about employment law. So I decide I'm going to employ Robert, we'll say, whatever job it might be, and along the line, but I've offered him a job, And then all of a sudden I find out something about him, that he might have done something that doesn't really suit my image of the company. Can I sack him before he gets started, or what does the employment law say about stuff like that?
Thanks, Alan. I brought a couple of cases today to highlight when you can sack someone before they start, and it was also to highlight a part of the law in the Fair Work Act that's not quite well known. It's not unfair dismissal. This case involves... I can mention names because these are published cases, Alan.
Yep.
So we'll call her Mrs. Argentia, and she was... She applied for a job with a perfume company. It doesn't matter what the perfume... These cases are available on the Fair Work Commission website if anybody's interested. It's a Sydney case as well. And it wasn't an unfair dismissal case, but she applied for a job as a casual. She was offered a job as a casual, which is interesting in itself. They offered her a job, and before she signed the contract, she did a whole lot of stuff that they call onboarding. I'm using that word because they used this. They made a big deal of it, the employer. You know, you sign the forms, you give the tax file declaration, the superannuation, you acknowledge all the policies, et cetera, et cetera. Then she signed the contract. And this is a hot off the press case this year, 2023, July, 24th of July, 2023.
Not very old at all.
Not very old at all. These cases that we say turn on their own facts, but it raises some interesting issues. So far, she's got a job. She's done the onboarding, which is the expression they use. She signed the contract. They then tell her that she's got to go to do some training, a training session, but they're not going to pay for it. She has to do some training session to learn about the perfume. To sell it to her, they say it's a masterclass session and you're going to get a gift.
Yeah.
Pausing there.
I'm not going to pay you, but we're
pausing there. That could be considered some valuable, what we call consideration, some token of giving you something to come along. But she didn't like this, and she said, "I don't want to come. Or, you know, I don't think that's the law. You know, you should be paying me, etc., etc."
Yeah.
You get the vibe so far. The lady's starting to create some waves. Now, I don't know if she was or not, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to her, but. The response came back and said, you've got to turn up, and it's part of the training, and it's you'll enjoy it. It's part of it's truly beneficial for your knowledge. I'm trying to sell it to her. It was due, let's call it 19th of April. That's the day it was this year. And the day before, she said that she wasn't going to, you know, go along. And they wrote to her in these terms. They could have handled this differently, but what they said was, regret to inform you that we're withdrawing the band, the brand ambassador role, that's what they call it. We're withdrawing that from the market, so we don't need you anymore. No longer available. And we've also cancelled our masterclass at the last minute. Apologies for the inconvenience. We'll call you if we need you, you know, in future, something like that. So at this stage, she's a casual, hasn't started work. She never, and she had shifts planned to work, but she never, it was accepted. She didn't work any shifts, didn't get paid any money. Is she an employee? And if she argued that she'd been dismissed, but it wasn't an unfair dismissal case because she's a casual. At that stage, she's not eligible to make an unfair dismissal claim. It's not a discrimination case. She didn't handle it that way. On her advice, excuse me. On her own advice, presumably, she took another option. And if I can just briefly explain. So in the law, the employment law, because you asked me about the hypothetical before, there are general protections available to employees and prospective employees. And those protections are that you have the right to exercise a workplace right to make an inquiry about your contract. For example, someone is an employee and has a sexual harassment case against someone, they can invoke their grievance procedure. They want to, you know, so they're exercising their right under their contract, or they can go to the VCAT, or they can make a... And you can't be victimised for doing this. So if the only reason you sack someone is because they're doing that, that's unlawful.
Right.
So the government put that in there as a protection. You also have the right of association with a union and, you know, lawful association, so protecting that. You can't get sacked just because you're away sick, lawfully sick with a medical certificate, for example, so that's protected in one of the sections. and you can't be discriminated against.
Yep.
Unlawfully. So you're treated less favourably. So that's the general scheme. Now, what is it that you have to do to fall foul of this legislation? So they call them, dismissal is one. She said she'd been dismissed. You could be injured at work, and that could bring Robert in. There could be an injury, a psychological injury. It could be altering your position to your detriment, so I'm demoting you, for example. Or it could be discrimination, altering position, dismissal. They're the main one. Injury, four. They're called adverse action. They're adverse. They're things that are bad, but they're not unlawful in themselves. Because if you get dismissed, that's not unlawful. They become unlawful if you do them because the person is exercising a right that they have lawfully.
Yeah.
Okay, so what she did is she took this general protections claim. She said the employer, the perfume company, unlawfully dismissed me because I was raising questions about my contract. You know, I was raising issues about, should you pay me?
Yeah.
My entitlements. And what the employers typically do, Alan, is they push back on this and they say, you've got no right to make this claim because you haven't been dismissed. And the case is interesting for this issue. The outcome we'll get to in a minute, but when I tell you this, you'll guess what the outcome is. They looked at relatively recent full bench Fair Work Commission authority that said you don't just look at the contract. The contract doesn't determine everything. You can look at if there's a written contract, and there was in this case, but she hadn't started work. So they said, how can you dismiss someone's employment? Because a dismissal has to be the person's employment is at the initiative of the...
Yeah.
Okay, so was her employment terminated? The employer said, no. We'd only done all this onboarding stuff. She never started. She never did day's work. We didn't pay her. How can she be an employee? You look at the relationship. So they said, you look at the whole relationship, you look at everything around what's happened up until then. And when they looked around what they'd done, she'd signed all the forms, she was effectively on the books, ready to start, signed all the documents, was about to do a course. And they said, employment relationship has been terminated, has been severed, and that's why she was deemed to have been dismissed. Then, of course, we never get to the outcome of this because this is what's called a preliminary case just to deal with whether she was eligible to make this claim, and they found that she had been dismissed and she was within time with her application, and therefore they could proceed with the case.
Yeah, right.
Now, it was actually going to go to a conciliation. That's next, so we don't know about that, obviously, because if it settles, we're not going to know about it.
Yep.
And we'd only know about it if it went all the way to a hearing, and it didn't, as far as I'm aware. So, although she'd signed the contract, but never started, this commission on this occasion formed the view that she'd been dismissed and done a razzoo of work.
All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections. We're talking to both Philip and Robert from Hutchison Legal. We didn't actually cover the question that I asked on that last case, or before that last case, that supposing you did all that this lady did, signed a contract and all that, so we'll say it's Robert, and I've offered him a job as a lawyer, and all of a sudden I find out that he's been involved in some scandal and I don't want him. Can I there? Would that be an unfair dismissal, or what would happen there?
Oh, is an unfair dismissal. Well, the sorts of things that can undo a person is if they lie at an interview. If you're talking about, you look at the inherent requirements of the job. What is this job entailing? So if you need certifications, medicals, whatever you need to do. If you're a taxi driver, you need a current license. Yep. You might need qualifications, et cetera, et cetera. You'll be able to do the job. So if you lie about that, then that's grounds for dismissal.
Yep.
You're not inherently doing the job.
Supposing I didn't ask him about, because you're not allowed to ask about their private life. Now, supposing I didn't ask, and all of a sudden that.
Well, that's not their private life. You're allowed. Employers are allowed to ask about things that go to their skills, the inherent requirements of the job. So you're talking about Robert here.
Yep.
Just for the record, I have an immaculate record.
Well, I shouldn't say that.
It would be perfectly okay for an employer to say, so are you admitted? Do you have your practicing certificate? Have you done all the requisites? Where have you worked? What's your experience?
I'm talking about something apart from that. I'm trying to get away from that. I'm talking about something in a person's personal life. Leave Robert out of it. I found out something about a personal private life.
What have we found out, Alan? What have we found out?
Well, he might have been, I don't know, he's done something that's really bad.
It might be that he's got a conviction, this employee, but is it relevant if he's able to do his job? So those things are kind of irrelevant, personal life. I know employers do look at, when they interview, they go and look at your social media.
Yep.
That's you know, be
they
careful.
They do now,
and they find out what sort of person you are. That's grounds for dismissal if you say something while you're employed and you use social media to derogate your employer or say something. If you're in breach of policies, you know, you've sexually harassed someone, you bullied them, etc., etc. But you're asking me about something that they found out about the person before. It would be largely irrelevant. If it's going to affect the what they call operational requirement, inherent requirements of the job, I can't. If it's a nurse, you know, what do you expect a nurse to be able to do? They say they've worked in three hospitals and they've lied to you. They haven't worked anywhere.
Yeah.
They haven't even got...
That's a bit different.
That's a bit different. But I'm trying to understand what it might be that you find out about the personal thing. So you can't discriminate against someone. And so, for example, if I can make up an example, I know you're not thinking this, if you found out that the employee was in a single-gender relationship or they are because of their race, you think, oh, I didn't know they were a refugee, or didn't know they were a single mum, that would be discrimination. You're dismissing the person. That's against the Equal Opportunity Act because you can't discriminate on the basis of gender, sex, marital relationships, and so on and so forth, family-related responsibilities, the whole string of them. So it depends what the example is. So that could potentially be a problem, and it could be potentially an unfair dismissal case.
No worries. We've got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more. We've got some questions for next time.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections. I don't know what's happened there. The computer's gone a bit funny. But anyway, righto, guys, we always like to send you away with a question, and we've got a... I think this is a fascinating case, and well, fascinating situation. Right, a guy buys, and this is a guy who rang me last week. A guy's bought a block, well, he bought a house, and it had a fire in it, which really isn't a lot of to do with, except he buys a house at auction. He gets a builder's fence put up, not at the footpath, but about 10 metres in, something like that in. They demolish the house. His first rule, his age is getting a permit to demolish. He demolishes the house, and then he demolishes the house. The land is vacant for a long while, and because he's got to try and get finance, and there's a whole lot of reasons. But anyway, the vacant. So you've got this block of land. It's got the builder's fence about 10 metres in from the footpath on his own property. Not a problem. He goes down there a few weeks ago, and somebody has put two old cars in between the footpath and that fence on private property, right? So he goes and asks all the neighbours. He thinks, oh, someone's just parked them there. And they say, no, it's not our cars. So he rings the police, and the police come and have a look, and they say, no, they're not stolen, and they're old. We don't want to know anything about them. It's on private property. So then he goes to the council, and they say, well, we can't cart them away because they're on private property, nothing to do with us. So all of a sudden he wants to know, what can he do? First of all, there's a few issues here. He doesn't want to pay the a tow truck to come and get it because he... Hang on. He doesn't want to pay a truck driver to come, a tow truck to drag him out in the street, because he said, I can drag him out in the street, the council can collect them, and that's the end of the story. But he doesn't see why he should have to pay for the tow truck, first of all. Secondly, you can get these people that pay $100 for a car or something, they come along and they cart them away. Yeah. So what he wants to know is, first of all, how can he get rid of him? Secondly, how can he cover himself? Because we'll say he rings up one of these cars away for free, and he sells not for free, he sells them for $100 each the way they go. 6 months later, a guy turns up and says, hey, where's my cars? And the guy says, well, I sold them. He said, $200. I got $100 each. And he says, no, they were worth $1,000 each. And he says, well, no, they weren't. They were just junk. So then how does he cover himself to make sure that he doesn't get somebody starting to say to him, well, I want the cars back, or I want $2,000 each?
Alleging that it was his property.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a whole lot of issues there as to how does a guy get rid of them. They should never have been on private property, but nobody wants to know that they're on the private property. The police don't want them. They're not stolen. The council says, well, we're not coming in on your private property. Not our responsibility. He can sell them, and that's probably the way to get rid of them, because he don't want to pay the tow truck to cart them out the front. And then he could be charged with dumping the cars out the front anyway.
Because that's right.
He's dumped them. So he wants to cover himself, but he also wants to make sure that he's not... that he doesn't get a claim come against him and say, well, where are my cars?
Fantastic.
I think there's a few...
There's about three or four issues there. Yeah. Uncollected Goods Act, PPSR registrations, all sorts of things, but someone will get their teeth into that.
For us, and if you can come back next month. Now, we've got about another 4 minutes.
Four minutes.
Philip, and I believe you've got another case that we didn't get to a minute ago.
I could touch on that really briefly, and then I can mention something else if you...
Well, mention the other thing first.
All right, mention it now?
Yep.
Okay. At Hutchinson Legal, we give people a newsletter if they're interested in it. Over the past year, just an example, we've talked about signing off on off the plan contracts, what's a class action, pet ownership, ins and outs of pet ownership, cryptocurrency, on and on. Windfall gains tax, rental issues, employment issues, spyware. The spring edition, which is coming out in about a month or early next month, will have a special feature on estate planning, yep. Wills and estate planning.
That'll be better later.
Why is it important to have a valid will? What factors should I consider when appointing an executive? I've got a holding a draft in my hand. Clients get these mailed or emailed to them free. If anyone's interested, they can jump on our website, Google Hutchinson Legal, and telephone us or send us an email, and we're happy to put them.
Sounds good.
Or they can come into the radio station and pick up copies. You have some answer.
Copies here.
Complimentary copies.
Now, just very briefly, too, and maybe another question, because you've just touched on it yourself. You just mentioned the off the plan, people buying properties off the plans. All right, can you have a look as to how people can, like up until a year ago, it would have been all right. But we've had about three or four major builders fall over now.
Excellent.
So what happens if you've paid a deposit and it's not off the, it's off the plan, so that could be 3 or 4 years away. How can you cover yourself on that? Could you put that down for next month too?
Yeah. That's a, well, we won't preempt the answer, but that's probably a liquidator claim.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be, because otherwise no one's going to put their money up.
That's right. It's a risk.
All right, quickly.
Yes. Okay. How much time? I spoke about the case before about the lady who the court said, well, you had a contract, but there was no relationship. There was another case in the federal court, another lady who applied for a job. This time she didn't get to contract stage, so they offered her a job. They sent her the contract. And she started to ask questions. She said, I'm going to get my lawyers to look at it. I need to make changes. I've told you also that I've got knee injuries and back injury, and I'm going to need an ergonomic desk, and I'm going to need special mats, et cetera, et cetera. When they heard all this, the employer said they didn't do it very well either. Again, this is a published case, so it's Marriage and Ericsson Australia. And I make no... this is just a published case. So anyway, what they said was, sorry, we're withdrawing our offer.
Yep.
And she did what the other lady did. She didn't, it wasn't an unfair dismissal. It was a general protections claim. She said, I was entitled to make inquiries about my contract, issues arising out of my contract. And also she invoked the Equal Opportunity Act. She said, because I was asking for an ergonomic desk, et cetera, I'm allowed to do that. That's discrimination. So the issue that came before the court was there a relationship? And the court said, no, this was all pie in the sky stuff. We don't know what contract you're going to end up with. She had no case. She could have taken a discrimination case elsewhere, but this was on the general protections fair work point. So there was no contract. They said, we don't know what you're going to... So you didn't have any additional rights to raise issues about your contract, because that gives you the threshold to get into this general protections. I was making an inquiry and I was unlawfully... They withdrew the offer from me. So two different cases, different outcomes. For employers, it means be very careful when you're employing someone.
Oh, it's a minefield, isn't it? Guys, unfortunately...
Thanks, Alan.
Time's gone.
That's a shame.
Thanks for having you coming along.
Thanks for having us.
Not a problem. We'll see somebody from Hutchinson Legal on the second Wednesday of September. Year's nearly gone.
It's amazing. Thanks, everyone. Thanks listeners.